Peak Wealth Management proudly presents Finding True Wealth with Nick Hopwood, where we believe by providing education and guidance, we help our clients make sound financial decisions, which ultimately puts them on a path towards their definition of true wealth. Now, here is your certified financial planner professional and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Nick Hopwood.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president of Peak Wealth Management, with episode 3 in the FIRE series. Today, we're talking about the housing issue and no car issue. You know, a word on housing. One of the premises of the book is that we need to ditch the desk job and be our own boss in search of freedom to travel the world as young retirees, while at the same time not having a real home. I like the idea of traveling the world just as much as anyone, but I don't like the idea of being a permanent nomad. I still want to be able to come home to my own home, my own bed, my own stuff, etc. A very nice argument has been made for not owning your home and renting instead. But if you own, you know, you pay the mortgage, taxes, insurance, and maintenance. It costs a lot. But if we don't look at the house as a pure return on investment, it's a little bit different. There's a certain utility that we have from having our own place that is ours. It's mine. We can make it nice. We can make it the way we want. And the cost of the rent often equals the cost of the mortgage plus maintenance anyway. Trust me on this. It's how we allowed the tenants to pay off all the debt on over 22 rentals. The math works well for the landlord, not the tenant. So why would you want to be on the other side? You know, think about this if you have a 70-year retirement. After paying on that 30-year mortgage, where the payment equals the rent, you end up having no mortgage in year 31, where the renter is going to be paying rent for 70 years, plus inflation, plus lack of utility. This is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard of. And I usually don't like to be this rash, but think about it for a minute. Mortgage is over in year 31. The renter continues to pay forever. So I don't know how else to, you know, describe it. When I talk to my tenants, I ask them, why are you continuing to rent? And there's usually not a good answer. It's usually a bunch of gibberish. So let's use a simple example of $1,500 a month for your mortgage payment, which will include your property taxes and homeowner's insurance. Perhaps $1,000 of this payment is your principal and interest, which goes towards, or $1,000 is principal and interest and $500 is taxes and insurance. So over the years, your taxes and insurance will go up with inflation, but the $1,000 a month of principal and interest will not go up with inflation, and it will stop at the end of the mortgage term, usually 30 years. I like to counsel people for less, but neither here nor there. And that's assuming that you don't subscribe to the refinance addiction. You can check out the episode we did a couple years back with Sean Presnell. And if you don't take my advice of paying extra to make it a 15-year, you know, it's at least it's over in 30. So anyway, after your term is up, the $1,000 a month stops, and now your cost is just $500 a month of taxes and insurance. In our financial planning software, we itemize your liability versus other cost of living for this reason, because eventually it's going to go away. If your cost of living is $8,000 per month and $1,500 of that is housing, all else equal, your retirement cost will now be $1,000 less per month because the principal and interest on your mortgage is gone, and now your cost of living in retirement is just $7,000 per month. But in the renter scenario, the rent of $1,500 per month never stops, and the full amount will go up with inflation for the rest of your life. That means if the cost is $8,000 today, it'll be $8,000 per month in retirement also. It just doesn't make sense. So remember, part of the FIRE theory is that you need to save 60 to 70% of your income when you're young. Let's talk about housing. Well, let's think about housing and cars. So you're paying the $1,000 to $1,500 a month either way for housing, whether you own or rent. Personally, I'd rather have the ownership, as I just talked about. How about a car? So most people like to drive nice cars, and they make tons of stupid decisions like leasing and upgrading all too often and always buying new instead of used. So I like to buy my car used with like 25,000 miles or so. So the two cars that we have right now, my wife's car, it's like an $85,000 car, and we bought it with 25,000 miles for like $50,000. So look, $50,000 is a lot of money for a car, I get it. But We're going to drive it until it has 200,000 miles, and it'll probably still be worth, you know, 15,000 at that point. So it's not that bad when you look at it that way. My car, believe it or not, was an even better deal. It's like a $100,000 car, a Tesla Model S. I got it with 15,000 miles for 52,000. And again, it's the best car I've ever had, and I'm already looking forward to my next Tesla. But the bottom line is, even though it's a lot of money for a car, like 50,000 is a lot, I justify it because it is such a good deal. The quality and experience is outstanding. So anyway, we buy them with 25,000 miles or so, get a better deal. But even if you follow those rules, you know, it's still expensive. You know, people pay $400 a month plus $100 a month of insurance. So that's $500 a month or more times two for his and hers. And now that's $1,000 a month. You know, $1,000 a month is one of your major expenses. But what's the alternative? You know, what are you going to do? You're going to have one car instead of two? Are you going to live closer to your job or live in a city and take Uber and take the bus or take the train, ride a bike, walk? I mean, none of these options are realistic for me. I really can't picture this at all. So I would suggest buying used and drive it for a few years after the car's paid off and then enjoy that free cash flow. But in the fire story, you know, there's no car. You know, that's how they're able to save, you know, 60 and 70%. They're not going out to dinner. There's all these other things. They're not having real health insurance. So, but I wanted to talk about housing and cars because in America, most people think about their house and they think about their car. And these are two of the biggest expenses that we can have. Sadly, all too often people make wrong choices and they spend too much on their house and too much on their car. And that means they can't save any money in, you know, let alone 70% of their take-home pay. But if we make reasonable choices with the car and the house, we can still save, you know, a reasonable amount and enjoy, right? It's all about having a balance of enjoying life now and saving for the future so we can enjoy life in the future and retire with confidence. My conclusion is that the average couple or family who takes home $125,000 per year will not be able to make these decisions and save 60 to 70% of their take-home pay. It takes a very special person to be able to have the discipline, you know, make the choice to live in an apartment where they clearly have the resources to buy a nice home. It takes a special person who makes great income but still doesn't want to have a real transportation. But if we only care about saving money and accumulating money, and the quality of life as defined by most of us in America is different, then you could choose to live in an apartment right next to your office. Make it happen. So those are my thoughts on the FIRE aspect of spending on a house and a car. And final section of the FIRE episode, we'll be talking about the investment, getting to $1 million, and having that 4% withdrawal rate for the rest of your life.